Today is Tuesday, May 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The European Union pledges to work together to come up with a global vaccine for COVID-19.
Today is a defining moment for the global community.
Plus calls to relax sanctions on countries to boost humanitarian aid.
I see that as, a moral obligation countries imposing sanctions have to minimize the adverse effects of these sanctions on civilian populations.
And the Asian giant hornet has been spotted in the U.S. Those stories and more are next. The global confirmed coronavirus cases have surpassed 3.6 million, and deaths have topped 250,000. Several countries and organizations participated in an online initiative Monday organized by the European Union in a global effort to pledge for research, manufacturing, and distribution of a possible vaccine and treatments. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said this first meeting was only the beginning of the effort.
Today is a defining moment for the global community. At a time when we are sitting further apart than usual, the world has shown it is standing closer together than ever before.
Reporter Catherine Field is in Paris, and she spoke with International Edition's Lori London about their virtual first meeting on the cooperative effort to battle COVID-19.
There had been a fear, particularly fear that the United States or China might get a head start on the vaccinations involved in finding some way ahead with the coronavirus, not just the vaccination, of course, but diagnostics. And so the European Union got together with these other countries to get the money together, to get pledges together, to ensure that if there is a vaccine, if there is some new diagnostic available, that it will be available, accessible and affordable to all, that it won't be just going to the richest countries. And that was why they really got together here the first day of this pledging to get that money together. Now, they got together $8 billion. That might seem a lot of money, but in this world, that won't go very far. That's going to go in, for example, $3 billion is going to be spent to develop, manufacture and distribute a possible vaccine. We're needing to look at another $2.25 billion to develop treatments. And we're going to need something like $800 million for testing kits. And then you've got whatever sum is needed to stockpile protective equipment. So that was what the money is for. It's just the start. We're still looking at a June 4th launch day for this global vaccination movement. But it's certainly a good start.
As you mentioned, there are world leaders, French President Emmanuel Macron, German Chancellor Angela Merkel. What other countries participated?
Canada was also there. We had Saudi Arabia that was also taking part in it. There was the United Kingdom. There were special guests who were there, the King Abdullah II of Jordan, President of South Africa, President of Turkey. All of these were present on this virtual conference that was live beamed right across the European Union and many other countries.
Was America invited, or was this out of concern that America and the Trump administration policy of America first would be prohibited to the rest of the world?
The United States and China were invited to this global pledging event, but they didn't come. Of course, the big concern has been that because of America First policy, it might mean the unfair distribution of any vaccine. People are still here hoping that China and the United States will change their minds. They will give more money to this pledge. French President Emmanuel Macron said after the initiative, he said that he was convinced the Americans would join. He said they were on the sideline today, but he said that wouldn't hold back the initiative because he feels the initiative has to keep going forward. And when you look, for example, at what France contributed today, 500 million euros, that's a lot, but you put that together with the 1.2 billion euros that France has already put through the French Development Agency to support healthcare systems in Africa, we're seeing France in particular take a very crucial role in this. They want to make sure that it is a global effort. It's a multilateral, a multinational effort, and not one that's led just by one nation.
President Macron really has taken a strong leadership role since this pandemic began.
This is what he likes. He likes multilateralism. He likes helping. He likes looking forward. Some people have criticized him for it, saying that he's just sort of making it up as he goes along. Others are saying that this is the sort of initiative that the world needs. And we heard that in most of the speeches, particularly Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau and German Minister Angela Merkel, talking about how the coronavirus pandemic needs a multilateral solution.
Well, I do understand there were some NGOs from the U.S., foundations and companies taking part.
Yes, Bill and Melinda Gates, they were there. Their foundation, of course, has been very much behind the coronavirus vaccination push. But the big name that came out of nowhere, no one expected, was she gave €1 million to this fund. And you could really see when the EU Commission President announced this that she was so pleased because it really did give more of an international field.
Catherine Field is a reporter based in Paris, France, and she was speaking to our own Lori London. A number of human rights organizations, aid agencies, and former diplomats have called on the United States to ease sanctions on adversaries such as Iran, Venezuela, and North Korea to facilitate medical and food assistance during the coronavirus pandemic. After Iran launched its first military satellite in April, in the midst of the coronavirus outbreak, 90% of the U.S. House of Representatives members moved to extend an arms embargo against Tehran. Iran, one of the hardest hit nations by COVID-19, is seeing some support for the call to ease trade and financial restrictions that hinder its ability to import critical drugs and medical equipment. Peter Harrell at the Center for New American Security, a policy research group, told VOA via Skype that it was important to take a look at when to impose sanctions during a pandemic.
I see that as, a moral obligation countries imposing sanctions have to minimize the adverse effects of these sanctions on civilian populations.
VOA's Brian Patton takes things from here.
Venezuela was experiencing shortages of food and medicine even before the U.S. imposed sanctions on its oil industry to weaken socialist leader Nicolas Maduro's grip on power. The coronavirus pandemic has made Venezuela's situation even worse as the collapse of global gasoline prices has decimated oil revenue, the country's economic lifeline. The U.S. State Department offered to lift some sanctions if Venezuela formed a transitional government without Maduro. But Caracas has so far rejected the U.S. offer, and Maduro has indicated he may cancel next year's legislative elections because of the pandemic. In North Korea, neither Kim Jong-un's return to public view after a long, unexplained absence, nor Pyongyang's dubious claims to have no coronavirus cases have eased growing concern that the pandemic is disrupting food supplies in a country already suffering from shortages. Advocates for tough sanctions on North Korea over its nuclear weapons program argue that providing coronavirus aid would allow authoritarian governments to spend more resources on weapons and illicit activities. While the pandemic may weaken America's adversaries, Washington is being urged by rights groups and others to balance the need to maintain pressure on authoritarian leaders with the growing humanitarian needs of people living under those regimes. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
South Korea reported just 3 new coronavirus cases on Tuesday, while the country's professional baseball league returned to action with a slate of games played in stadiums without any fans. 2 months ago, South Korea was adding around 500 new cases of coronavirus each day, but the government used a series of measures, including aggressive testing and a smartphone application alerting people to nearby infections, to push down the spread of the virus. In New Zealand, that country is also reporting promising progress with its second consecutive day of 0 new cases. On Monday, Spain and Italy began relaxing restrictions. Earlier today, I spoke with Paris-based journalist Nicolas Pinault via WhatsApp to get an idea of how people were reacting to the easing of restrictions and what concerns they may still have.
Well, the only word that people had in their mouth was freedom. I mean, you can talk about, you know, elders in Spain or people, construction workers in Italy. Everybody was quite a relief being able to go outside without some restrictions. But we have to mention that you have some differences between Spain and Italy. For example, in Spain, the lockdown, the end of the lockdown, you have different phases. Right now, they're in phase one. And for example, people above the age of 70, they were allowed to go out for 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the evening, for example. And above that, people between these two schedules, you have people above 14 years old. They're and adults. They can, you know, go outside pretty normally. We have to mention that in Spain, wearing a face mask is compulsory in public transportation. That's something very important. And still, people, they cannot meet outside of their house, which is something, obviously, with this Mediterranean culture, something very important. And also some shops, bars, and churches, which is very important in this Catholic country, are starting reopening since Monday. Although in Italy, you mentioned construction business. That's something important, especially for the small businesses. But bars and, for example, ice cream parlors remain shut down over there. So it's pretty something like a relief in this southern part of Europe.
Speaking geographically, France is more or less in the middle between these two countries. What's been the reaction there since there are still several stay-at-home orders in place?
Yeah, the yellow of the lockdown is going to start on Monday 11th. But as of right now, the government has extended the state of health emergency. And the simple reason, and President Macron stated that, is that right now the epidemic is not over. Of course, the numbers are better, especially people who need intensive care. That's something that's much, much better. But so far, France has 25,000 casualties in this battle against the virus. And the government wants to make sure that if the lockdown occurs on May 11th, it's not going to be too quick. So then you're not going to have this second wave of cases like you had maybe in other countries. So as of Monday, people, they're going to be able to go back to work. But really, the government urged people to telework in order to avoid, you know, transportation being crowded. And as of schools, mayors and local authorities, they're going to have the discretion to be able to decide if they have the means to open schools in a safe environment for kids.
Are they concerned that things could reemerge and have a second wave?
Yeah, and the main concern is with kids, because so far we know that kids, they might be able, you know, to get the disease and get the virus, but mainly to spread it with adults. And that's the main concern. That's why even like for France, even if schools may reopen next week, you have many parents saying, you know, it's not safe for me to put my kids back to school. And that's why in some countries, schools will not reopen until September.
That was journalist Nicolas Pinault, who's based in Paris, France. And still to come up on the program,
hundreds of Asian giant hornets have made their first appearance in the United States. Known as the murder hornet for their size and lethal venom, the species is the world's largest hornet.
This is VOA News.
Make a difference by honoring ordinary people doing extraordinary things to help one another. VOA encourages you to tell us about everyday people who have shown leadership in your communities during the coronavirus crisis. Submit your nominations to VOA Leaders at voanews.com. Send us your name, phone number, and email, and a VOA reporter will contact you. We're all in this together.
Philippines telecommunications regulator has ordered the country's leading broadcaster, ABS-CBN Corporation, to cease operations immediately, saying that its license has expired. Now, to learn more about what's going on, I spoke to reporter Stanley Gahete in Quezon City via Skype.
Just 2 days after the celebration of World Press Freedom Day last Sunday, the Philippine government ordered the closure of the country's largest broadcast television network after its congressional franchise expired, putting almost 11,000 of its workers out of job. The National Telecommunications Commission, or NTC, issued today a cease and desist order against ABS-CBN Broadcasting Corporation, the first in the network's history after 65 years of service. ABS-CBN's 25 years franchise to operate TV and radio broadcasting stations expired on May 4. The NTC has directed the TV network to stop operating its various TV and radio broadcasting stations nationwide to absent a valid congressional franchise as required by law. It is also gave the company 10 days to respond as to why the frequencies assigned to it should not be recalled. The NTC issuance is a blow to its independence as a regulatory body, since it is obvious that it succumbed to the threats of the government and a serious blow to the freedom of the press. This was according to Carlos Zarate, a minority leader in the Philippine Congress. NTC is an agency responsible for the supervision, adjudication, and control over all telecommunication services. The Radio Control Law Act No. 3846, as amended, provides that no person, firm, or company, association, or corporation shall construct, install, establish, or operate a radio transmitting station or a radio receiving station used for any commercial purposes or a radio broadcasting station without having first obtained a franchise, therefore, from the Congress of the Philippines. You know, Steve, 11 bills seeking the renewal of franchise of ABS-CBN remains pending before Congress. The earliest was filed last July 2019. The National Union of Journalists of the Philippines, or NUJP, immediately held a candlelight meeting. And earlier this year, Steve, various media organizations, celebrities, and other concerned groups conducted weekly rallies to protest the government's plan to close the broadcasting company, saying such action will adversely affect press freedom in the country.
Now, Stanley, you mentioned Press Freedom Day, that this happened really the day after it on May 4th. And this is not the first news outlet that the government has essentially shut down, taking action against Rappler. So what is the rationale, aside from the franchising licensing, that the administration is using against ABS-CBN, since that has been an organization that has been fairly critical of Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte?
Yes. You know, Steve, it is known that President Rodrigo Duterte attacks major networks and major press companies here in the Philippines, particularly the Rappler and ABS-CBN, and even the Philippine Daily Inquirer for the print platform. And, you know, maybe because the government is afraid of exposing different issues.
You mentioned that ABS-CBN has 10 days to reply to the government saying why its frequencies shouldn't be recalled. You also mentioned that there are other bills to renew the franchising license. What real recourses does ABS-CBN have?
The NTC is requiring the ABS-CBN to reply after 10 days, but as based on the statement of ABS-CBN, they will comply. They will comply on what the NTC ordered them to do so. So we are just waiting for other immediate actions of the network, of the television network. So far, they will just comply. And as far as we know, the network will stop operating this end of the day, this midnight.
Stanley Gahete is a reporter based out of Quezon City in the Philippines. Venezuelan authorities have detained two U.S. citizens working with a U.S. military veteran. Reuters' Libby Hogan has more.
Venezuela's leader says authorities stopped an armed incursion attempt on Sunday in an alleged plot to oust him. Officials say eight people were killed during the foiled incursion. President Nicolas Maduro says the country's detained two U.S. citizens for the alleged failed attack, and that the two were working with another U.S. military veteran who has claimed responsibility. On state TV, Maduro likened the plot to Rambo and said 13, quote, terrorists were arrested on Monday. He claims it was done in coordination with Washington, aiming to enter the South American country via the Caribbean coast.
On Sunday, May the 3rd, Venezuela faced down an attempted maritime incursion from terrorist mercenaries that were trained in Colombian territory under financing and support from the United States and the current Colombian government.
Venezuela's attorney general said the contract was valued at $200 million and alleged he had seen the signature of opposition leader Juan Guaido on the contract. Maduro frequently accuses political rivals of attempts to overthrow him.
The main objective was to kill the Venezuelan president, a terrorist attack in the middle of a pandemic.
Juan Guaido is recognized by the U.S. and more than 50 countries as the legitimate leader of Venezuela. Maduro also showed what he said were the U.S. passports and other identification cards belonging to Aaron Berry and Luke Denman, who he said were in custody and had been working with American military veteran Jordan Gaudreau, who leads a Florida-based security company called Silvercorp USA. Gaudreau identified himself as the organizer and confirmed those working with him to Reuters over the phone.
That was Reuters reporter Libby Hogan. Irish Foreign Minister Simon Coveney says progress in trade talks between the European Union and ex-member Britain has not been good, and that the two sides will hit a crisis point unless there is progress in the coming weeks. Coveney made the comments to RTE Radio, referring to two rounds of talks before the start of July. The EU and Britain have been negotiating new trade arrangements to kick in once Britain fully leaves the European Union in December. But talks have reached an impasse, with Britain pushing for a basic free trade agreement. Britain says the EU is making demands it had not sought from other trading partners, such as an insistence on level playing field rules, including in areas such as taxation and state aid. Britain opposes measures that would require it to maintain rules similar to European standards. More negotiations are to take place next Monday. EU officials say there is still time for London and Brussels to meet a deadline at the end of June to agree on extending negotiations beyond the end of the year. The Asian giant hornet, known as the murder hornet for its size and lethal venom, has made its first appearance in the western U.S. state of Washington, with several hundred sightings being reported thus far. Reuters' Gloria So has that story.
State agriculture official Sven Erik Spickiger says the deadly insect's arrival poses a major threat to bees and potentially even humans.
The first detection was in Washington State was December 8th and was turned in by a homeowner near Blaine, which is up by the Canadian border. And it's a fairly significant detection because Asian giant hornet has been on our watch list because of its known activity of killing entire honeybee hives.
Spickiger warns of a catastrophic impact on pollination and agricultural systems if the hornets were to start spreading across the U.S. Just a few of them are capable of wiping out an entire beehive within hours, killing bees by decapitating them before taking the hive as their own and taking the brood to feed their own young. And Spickiger says what makes the hornets extra dangerous is how their ground nests could be hidden in plain sight.
We really don't want any private citizen trying to mess with an Asian giant hornet nest. Typical beekeeping attire simply will not protect you. The stinger on this insect is 6 millimeters long and will go readily through most cloths.
Spickiger says anyone coming across a nest should immediately alert authorities. While the hornets do not generally target people, they can attack when threatened with stings that could potentially be fatal.
An Asian giant hornet will sting you multiple times and can sting you multiple times and deliver larger doses of venom just because of the size of them.
Scientists don't know for sure how the murder hornet made its way to Washington State. They say the most likely scenario is that the big bugs made their way onto a container ship docking at one of Washington's ports. And Spickiger says following the discovery of the first hornet, several hundred additional sightings have been reported.
Gloria So reports for the Reuters News Agency. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, your computer, or any other device to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a terrific Tuesday.